Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about episode 1 of a Wikipedia reading of Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. And I've just done Arthur Schopenhauer, who's a bit of a shocking person. And these are sort of philosophers you sort of are not major philosophers, but they're the key philosophers. Schopenhauer set off, is sort of like the founding philosopher of Nazism with his theory of the will, and you know, just trying to get what the will is. So it's not like free will, it's sort of like a unrelated to God direction that a species take, which is linked into sex and all things like that. And also dominating other, sort of like an animal belief. And reading it, I've come across this word which I'd never heard before. It's pedatory, and that's actually, he believed that, and that's romantic relationships between a young man and an older man to prevent children, sort of like a contraceptive mission. It's sort of like it's in there that he said, look, I think this is a good thing, you know, which you may dislike. So it's actually buried deep in there. This is Schopenhauer. You can hear the there's sort of increasing busyness outside the street because it's outside the school, a school drop-off. And one of the people that you sort of know about, if you read about Marxism, you read that it's founded on Hegel, and Schopenhauer knew Hegel and really hated him, thought he was a complete clown and klutz, and the majority of people think he's a klutz, but he's the founding father of communism. He's the philosopher which Marx sort of transmuted into Marxism. Sort of a very interesting background, and there's a lot of things to get to know that from reading about philosophy, about monism, the theory of form and soul, so the Platonic theory. So the Platonic theory went into religious theory quite well because he had a theory of a soul. Now, again, draw with what you will from Plato, there's the form, so he's the idea that the concepts exist in a form, like there's a spiritual void realm where there is a spirit, and your spirit is out in that void, and before it comes into reality, and in that void it has experience, encounters the perfect form of a chair. And so when you see a chair, you recognize, obviously cognitive science, we disagree with it now. So this really, and but people back then really believed in it. And so these people dabble in maths and things which, you know, we nowadays say, well, no, look, that's pretty well sorted by science, thank you very much. This dovetailed into the Christian belief, the religious belief, and both Hegel and definitely Schopenhauer tried to re-engineer Christianity. They felt Christianity, or Hegel didn't, but Schopenhauer tried to re-engineer. He sort of re-engineered and came across Buddhism. This is the aesthetic of Buddhism. And indeed, this is strange that the Nazis find this a link to Buddhism. I just blowing my head in. There's monists, the idea of, so I've got the idea of what a form is. Monism is the idea of a concept of knowledge, that nothing exists except particles of knowledge in God's mind. Yeah, we are all, all crazy stuff nowadays. But let's read about Hegel. George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, and it says how you say it in German, and Hegel, Wilhelm Georg, yeah, I've got the Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, it's so hard to pronounce. August 27th, 1770, so this is before the French Revolution. The American Revolution happens in 1776, so he's 6 years old. to who died in 1831. So this is, I think, there's a French Restoration, like, sort of start of Faraday and all that type of stuff. So I believe it was a German philosopher, an important figure in the German idealism. So this is both these people were trying to work out what the ideal is. So their commentary was, we've got here, but what is the ideal? He achieved wide recognition. No, we don't have that today. We have people who are critics, or we have idealists who are in the political movement, but in the philosophical movement, there are people who are not political. They're more public servants with respect to it. He achieved wide recognition in his day, and while primarily influential within the continental tradition of philosophy, he's become increasingly influential in analytic tradition as well. So this continental tradition, this Descartes, the spirit, sort of what we would consider, sort of what we'd think a philosopher was, a wandering around a sophist, you know, a wise person on how to live, where the analytical philosophy is, you know, theory of knowledge. Although Hegel remains a divisive figure, his canonical stature within Western philosophy is universally recognised. So he's a key, though, was he good or was he bad? He's definitely a figure then. Hegel's principal achievement was his development of a distinctive articulation of idealism, sometimes termed absolute idealism. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so that is true. In which dualisms, in which the dualisms of, for instance, mind and nature, subject and object, are overcome. So, yeah, and this is interesting in information theory. His philosophy, in terms of, you've got A, not A, not A, which is B, so A, B, which is not A, the relationship between A and B, and the knowledge of that relationship. So you've got fourfold symmetry for any piece of knowledge. So if you've got a piece of data, you've got it's not that, and what is the meaning of not that, and what is my understanding of that? It's not my labouring through robotics has got me to that. Bye bye, Rue. Have a lovely day. Don't get too cold. It's pretty cold in those shorts. Bye bye, Rupert. His philosophy of spirit conceptually integrated psychology, the state, history, art, religion, and philosophy. Yeah, I don't know. His account of Master Slave dialectic has been highly influential, especially in 20th century France. Dialectic means an opposing view, that once you describe what a master is, you have a slave. And this is interesting in that that master-servant thing is that if you are paid to produce an idea, that idea is not yours, it's the master-servant act intellectual property. It's a very interesting aspect. His account of special importance is the concept of spirit, geist, sometimes translated into mind, as the historical manifestation of the logical concept and sublation, whatever that means, sublation. It's called Aufhebung, integration without elimination or reduction. Integration. So just of seemingly contrary or opposing opposing factors. Examples include the apparent opposition between nature and freedom, between immanence and transcendence. I don't know what that means, but the central idea is in Marxism is dialectic materialism. And that's a really heavy concept. But it's the idea that these two forces come together, and therefore you're justified with killing the upper class. Hegel has been seen as the 20th century as the originator of thesis, antithesis, and thesis triad. But as an explicit phrase, it's originated in Johann Gottlieb Fritsch, which I think is a little bit after him. So I have, fundamental. There you've got thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And I have a fourth level of the comprehension of all those three, the triads, which is sort of like a, if you believe a triad is a thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. It really is almost junk philosophy, unfortunately. Hegel has influenced many thinkers and writers whose own positions vary widely. Karl Barth described Hegel as a Protestant Aquinas, which is essentially, so Sir Thomas Aquinas was the medieval religious philosopher who went through and practiced scholasticism. This is where you've got a body of work which is deemed true, and another body of work which is of question. So you analyze it with that line by line, and then if you've got two bodies of work deemed true, you then look for contradictions between it to get further information. So that's scholasticism. While Maurice Marcel Duponty wrote, of all the great philosophical ideas in the past centuries, the philosophers of Marx, Nietzsche, phenomenology, German existentialism, and psychoanalysis had their beginning in Hegel. You've got the Carl Jung, the id and the ego, or whatever it is. It's sort of basically Hegelian. It sort of makes sense. It's almost like a picnic lunch of anti-pestos of ideas that you unpack. You go on a walk and someone asks you in about 10 minutes what is this, and you can give them an early thing. Okay. Oh my God, Father. Early years, childhood. He was born on the 27th of August, 1717, in Stuttgart, the capital of the Duchy of Württemberg, in southwestern Germany. Christened Georg Wilhelm Friedrich, he was known as the Wilhelm in his close family. His father, Georg Ludwig, which is why he would be called Wilhelm, because, okay, hey George, and you get two people coming over. I love this word. Georg Ludwig was Rentkrämer Sekretär, meaning Secretary of Revenue Office, a rent man, at the court of Karl Eugen, Duke of Oldenburg. Okay, so he would have been effectively the king, the duke. Hegel's mother, Maria Magdalena Luisa née Fromm, was the daughter of a lawyer of the High Court, Justice of Württemberg Court. So you can imagine those, the case for or the case against, and the judge coming up with it. She died of bilious fever, Gorlin fever, which means some gallstones, you imagine, when Hegel was 13. Hegel and his father also caught the disease, but narrowly survived. Hegel has a sister, so you can imagine that it probably could be off food or a diet. Christiane Louise, 1733, so she was 3 years younger, to 1832, I can't remember, died 3 years older, and her brother Georg, so they're all called Georg Ludwig. So the father was Georg Ludwig, and the father named the son Georg Ludwig, and her brother, who's also perished as an officer in Napoleon's Russian campaign in 1812. You've got to understand that Napoleon swept up a whole lot of people. Not everyone he invaded hated him. And so, 1812, how old would he have been? Oh, he died in 1812, 76. Yep, just an officer. At the age of three, he went to the German school. So German school. He entered the Latin school 2 years later. So you can imagine a German school being German, Latin school being Latin. He already knew the first declension, having been taught it by his mother. In 1776, he entered Stuttgart's Gymnasium Illustrum, and his during his adolescence read voraciously, copying lengthy extracts in his diary. Authors he read included Friedrich Gottlieb Klopstock, and writers associated with the Enlightenment, and Christian Garve and Gotthold Ephraim Lessing. His studies at gymnasiums were concluded with aptitude, graduation speech, and title. Now, we've got to compare this with, Schopenhauer, who wrote a satirical essay, got kicked out. Listen, the abortive state of art and scholarship in Turkey. Well, as if you'd know too much. Where did you get that? Tübingen, 1788 to 1793. So this is the build-up of the French Revolution. He's in Tübingen. Imagine what living this time would be like. Well, it's hard to imagine. At the age of 18, Hegel entered the Tübingen Shift, a Protestant seminary attached to the University of Tübingen, where he had as roommates the poet and philosopher Friedrich Hölderlin, and philosopher to be Friedrich Wilhelm Joseph Schelling, whatever Schelling is. Sharing a dislike for what they regarded as a restrictive environment of the settlement, the three became close friends and mutually influenced each other's ideas. You have to understand that the Protestants, besides being far-reaching, were quite restrictive in their ideas. They were the real heliocentric people. The geocentric people. All greatly admired Hellenic, which is Greek, civilizations, and Hegel additionally steeped himself in Jean-Jacques Rousseau and Lessing during this time. They watched the unfolding of the French Revolution with shared enthusiasm. Schelling and Hölderlin immersed themselves in theoretical debates on Kantian philosophy. So Kantian philosophy is some weird sort of, Newton was a real shock to the system that, you know, science could exist. So this is sort of like a rebirth of religious thought, a rebound of religious thought, which is not all that bad because it sort of teased out what the religious thought there. From which Hegel remained aloof. So Kant again, I'll read. Hegel at this time envisaged his future as a popular forest, a man of letters who serves to make the obtuse ideas of philosophers accessible to the wider public. Which he really did. You know, he really didn't. I don't think he really. He was real. A apologist for philosophers rather than getting any deep things. That's my view. So he was going to be a popular philosopher. His own felt need to engage critically with the critical ideas of Kantianism did not come until 1800. Although the violence in the Reign of Terror in 1873 damped Hegel's hopes, he continued to identify with the moderate Gordian fraction and never lost commitment to the principles of 1789, which he would express by drinking a toast to the stormy of Bastille on every 14th of July. So I'll just go in and check how everyone is and read about his burn. Burn's now in Switzerland, I'm sure. Back again doing a podcast on Hegel. This is still episode one, but I was called away, obviously, to do family stuff doing a few chores, getting back to it. So Hegel, as we call him, Hegler, bit of an insight here. He wants to be a popular historian, a popular philosopher. So his philosophy is one which appears to make philosophy work. So philosophy has these great problems of these two opposites, the yin and the yang, so to speak. How does it work in a whole? So he, in his popular philosophy, went down this track which looked at opposing opposites and try to work out a dialectic, as they called opposites, conflicting to produce it. And of course that was the engine which went into Marxism. And to be quite honest, I think mathematically Marxism doesn't do it for me, because you read it, and as you read it, you start writing equations in your head as to what's going on, and it just didn't have any differential equations in it to me. It was just, this causes that, then this will trigger that. It's sort of like a domino effect of things. But nonetheless, there's that sort of antagonism that the fundamental people, the people who are rich, are ripping off the poor, is that fundamental thing. But Hegel is the origin of Marxism, and both Hegel and Schopenhauer are post-Kantian people, and Kant responded, is sort of the Protestant religion, Christian religion response to the horror of Newton, that was, God was pushing everything, but God was using equations to do everything. I don't think people really understood where Newton was coming from, quite honestly, looking at him. So he, like any young, youthful person, got in behind the Reign of Terror. He looked at the French Revolution, saw this is fundamentally good, and so this sort of revolutional excuse added those two things together for Karl Marx, the sort of, you know, the communist revolution pulling down the regime. And there's this, after the revolution and after Napoleon, they set up basically an institute, a pre-United Nations, where they try to get, all monarchies working together to put down rebellions everywhere. Sort of just amazing to do. Let's see if I can read you this beautiful history book. Absolutely beautiful history book. Okay, so now he was at a particular spot. I don't know where it was. Stuttgart. Let's go back, because he's now moving off to Bern. Oh no, he was born in Stuttgart. Went to this German place called Tübingen. It's got Eudaeresis, whatever that is. It'll be fantastic to go around. Probably has a spur supermarket and a little cathedral and a bit of a cobbled place and a plaque for him, whatever it is. Going to Bern. Now, Bern is now in Switzerland, and I do remember a bear pit at Bern when I visited there in the 90s. Which I've been told has now been stopped. But besides the bear pit, it was just, I think, the largest covered shopping street in Europe was in Bern. But let's read it. He's in Bern 1793 to 96. So this is at the start, after the revolution, the French Revolution. He's not in the French Revolution. And then in Frankfurt, to 1797 to 1801. Can't quite work out how that goes. So that's Napoleon comes to power from consul to emperor. Having received his theological certificate, okay, now let's, what I'm going to try and do this German word, and there's 18 letters to this word, and it's Konistorialexamen from the Tübingen Seminary. So this is your ticket, your pass. Hegel became the Hofmeister, house tutor, to an aristocratic family in Bern. That would have been mind-numbing. 1793 to 1769. During this period, he composed a text which became known as the Life of Jesus. I think there may be Bibles about that one. And a book-length manuscript entitled The positivity of Christian religion. So, basically, everyone was thinking God, perhaps not Schopenhauer, but Newton thought God, Kant thought God, that God was right. Well, how are we going to start our thing? Well, God exists, everyone knows that. Okay, now let's look at what else is out there. So, his relationship with his employers becoming strained, Hegel accepted an offer mediated by Hollerin to take up a similar position with the wine merchant's family at Frankfurt to be relocated in 1797. There is this weird thing that people go, you know, really expect people not, there are certain people who are just absolutely able to fit in and they're vacuous, it's my thing. Here, Hollerin exerted an important influence in Hegel's thought. The thing is that everyone is set up for business, what they're doing, and this new person comes in with its other things they need. They're just looking to find what they need there, because what they need is not what everyone else needs. That's my overall view of it. Okay, so Hegel accepted an offer, so mediate, he had a mate, Hollerin. Hollerin. It's Odiaresis, whatever that, I don't know how the Germans do it, like Noel. Okay, we've got a diaresis on that one. It was just the diaresis, the two little, dots, and I'm sure there's a, it looks as though it's sort of like, I don't know, some sort of face with an O, you know, mouth, oh, like this. Here, Hollerin exerted an important influence on Hegel's thought. While in Frankfurt, Hegel composed an essay, Fragments on Religion and Love. In 17, I'm sure people go, oh, well, let's go around Frankfurt and fit. And in 1799, he wrote another essay called The Spirit of Christianity and Its Fate, unpublished during his lifetime. Also, in 1797, the unpublished, unsigned manuscript of, you have to sign your manuscripts there, because there's no computer files or anything like this, the oldest systematic program of German idealism was written. It was written in Hegel's hand, but thought to have been authored by either Hegel, Schelling, Hollerin, or an unknown fourth person. Okay, well, at least it's good that they've got every base covered there. Career years, 1801 to 1816. So this is, Napoleon has the 1812, 1815 is Waterloo. So Gordon Nappy B is going to have a bit of the Napster, as we call them. There's, Chucky D is Charles Darwin. Okay, in Jena, Bramberg, and Nuremberg. I'm just trying to give you a bit of a German feel for it. In 1801, Hegel came to Jena, with the encouragement of his old friend Schelling, who had held the position of an extraordinary professor at the university there. Now, extraordinary means generally, I've been extraordinary, I'm often invited on as an extraordinary member of committee, because they just like me there, but I'm extraordinary in that I'm not the ordinary member, I'm an extra. That's, so in scouts and various committees, I go along quite happily. So he's an extra professor. Hegel secured a position at the university as a private docent, unsalaried lecturer, after submitting the inaugural dissertation of De Orbis Planetarium. What? In which he briefly criticized arguments that assert, based on Bode's law or other arbitrary choice of mathematics theories, there must exist a planet between Mars and Jupiter. Unbeknownst to Hegel, Giuseppe Pazzi had discovered a minor planet, Ceres, within the orbit on January 1st, 1801. Well, look, there you go. And even today, people will tell you there's no planet Ceres there. Ceres is the most unknown mini planet, and it's sort of a diminutive, it's like the cutest planet. You know, imagine Pokemon's will be on it, or something like that. That's where Pokemon's come from, my friend. Later in the year, Hegel's first book, The Difference Between Features and Shielding Systems of Philosophy, was completed. He lectured on, and remember that he's not trying to be anything swish, he's just trying to get by and making it. He wants to be a publicist, he wants to market philosophy. He lectured on logic and metaphysics and gave joint lectures with Schelling on the introduction to the idea of the limits of true philosophy and held a philosophical disputorium. Okay, now this is different from, Schopenhauer, who set up, got someone and said, I'm going to run a lecture at the same time and see how many people I get. Oh, I get nothing. Oh, I'm stuffed. It's pretty amazing. In 1802, Schelling and Hegel founded a journal, a collaborative work, Journal der Philosophie, Critical Journal of Philosophy, to which they contributed pieces until the collaboration ended when Schelling left Würzburg in 1803. So I suppose Würzburg must be near Vienna. In 1805, the university promoted Hegel to a position of extraordinary professor, unsalary, after he wrote a letter to the poet and minister of culture, Johann Wolfgang Goethe. So Goethe was a minister of culture, wow, protesting the promotion of his philosophical adversary, Jacob Friedrich Fries, ahead of him. Everyone's heard of the famous McDonald's one, Fries. I'm sure you thought he was French fries. Hegel's attempt to enlist the help of a poet translator, Johann Friedrich Voss, so they got this beta symbol, which is the German for double S, to obtain a post in the newly renaissant University of Heidelberg, but failed. To his charge, and Fries was later in the same year made an ordinary professor, salaried there. So Fries is on the up, and he just gets turfed as a goon. With finances drying up quickly, Hegel now is under great pressure to deliver his book, The Long-Promised Introduction to His System. Hegel was putting the finishing touches on his book, Phenomenology of the Spirit. So the spirit is involved in, is part of the Platonic view that there's a spirit. Now, I'm just trying to work out where Descartes goes, the spirit, but now Descartes, mind of matter, spirit. But everyone believe in God. Okay, let's this. Hegel was putting the finishing touches on his book, Phenomenology of the Spirit, as Napoleon engaged Prussian troops on the 14th of October, 1806, in the Battle of Vienna, on a plateau outside the city. And unfortunately, it was complete stuff up by the Prussians, if I remember, and the French just absolutely whipped their ass. On the day before the battle, Napoleon entered the city of Vienna. Hegel recounted his impressions in a letter to his friend Friedrich Emanuel Niethammer. Typical German name, isn't it? Friedrich. I saw the Emperor. His Weltsoul, riding out of the city on reconnaissance. It is indeed a wonderful sensation to see such an individual who concentrated here in a single point, astride a horse, which is over the world and masters it. God. Lethal combination. Dictator worship. State stuff. Conflict. Revolution. Okay, Hegel is just priming himself for communism. Okay. Oh my God, I just read you this. This is off to the side. Hegel and Napoleon in Vienna, a picture of Napoleon going through and Hegel taking his hat off. Wow. From Harper's Magazine of 1895, whose meeting became proverbial due to Hegel's notable use of the world soul in reference to Napoleon, the world soul on horseback. Oh my God, Father, I'm sure Hitler thought he was a world soul. Pick out 2000, note that Haeckel's comment on De Nevere is all the more striking since at that point he had already composed a critical section of the Phenomenology in which he remarked the revolution had now officially passed into another land, Germany, and would be complete in thought that what the revolution had only partially accomplished in practice. Although Napoleon chose not to close down Jena, the university, I suppose, as he'd done other universities, the city was devastated and its students deserted the university in droves, making Hegel's financial prospects even worse. Following February, Hegel's landlady, Christina Burkhardt, who had been abandoned by her husband, gave birth to their son, Georg Ludwig Friedrich Fischer. So everything is Georg Ludwig. But he's Georg. It's the first time it's Georg. Everyone's Georg. Everyone's George. How amazing. So it's a legitimate child. I don't know. How does these Germans work? In March 1807, Haeckel moved to Bramberg, the Bramberg Gate, where Nithammer had declined and passed on to Haeckel an offer to become editor of a newspaper, the Bamberg Zeitung. Unable to find more suitable employment, Haeckel reluctantly accepted. Ludwig Fischer and his mother, the baby, whom Haeckel made an offer to marry following the death of her husband, stayed behind in Jena. The mum, he married the mum. Okay, sorry for being so stupid. I'll marry you, but no, we'll stay behind in general. He must have been a pretty awful person, pretty boring person. Landlady. Confused. In November 1808, Haeckel was again, through Netham, appointed to headmaster of gymnasium in Nuremberg, a post he held until 1816, so he's a long headmaster. While in Nuremberg, Haeckel adapted his recently published Phenomenology of the Spirit for use in the classroom. It's interesting that Haeckel was writing a school textbook, and also much later was Mendeleev was writing a school textbook and said, what we really need in a school textbook is a periodic table. It's pretty interesting. Part of his remit being to teach a class called Introduction to the Knowledge of Universal Coherence of the Sciences. What are you doing? You're doing that blah, blah, blah. You can imagine wagging at class. Introduction to the Knowledge of Universal Coherence of the Sciences. I've got another assignment, bloody hell. Haeckel developed the idea of an encyclopedia of philosophical sciences falling into three parts. Number one, logic. Two, philosophy. So this will be analytical philosophy of nature and philosophy of the spirits of Christian philosophy. Now we're really stuck with the logic. Everything else has gone away. In 1811, Haeckel married Marie Helena Susanna von Trocker, who didn't live as long. She's 1791. She's born in 1791. Sorry for working this out. He's born in 1770. She's 21 years older than her. So how old is he in? 1811. In 1811, he is 41 years old. Do I understand that? He's born in 1770. 41 years old. He marries someone who is 920. Oh my god. The eldest daughter of a senator. Well, that's a good thing. The period saw the publication of his second major work, The Science of Logic. Wissenschaft der Logik. Three volumes. 1812, 1813, 1816. And the birth of his two degenerate sons. Well, it's Carl Friedrich Wilhelm, so it's got two of his names. And Emmanuel Thomas Christian. Well, there you go. That's that's a pretty new, fresh name. Heidelberg and Berlin, 1816-31. So, amazing. Having received offers of post to the University of Elgin, Berlin, Heidelberg, Hegel chose Heidelberg, where he moved in 1816. Soon after, his illegitimate son, Ludwig Fischer, now 10 years old, joined the Hegel household in April 17, having thus far spent his childhood in an orphanage, as his mother died in the meantime. Yeah, okay. Wow. You can imagine, pretty awful. In that sense, Karl Marx is much more of a family man, as far as I can see. Okay. In 1818, Hegel accepted... I'm sorry, I'm out here in the wind. What happens is you get these Arctic fronts coming up through here. So, Australia's a really tropical country with these Arctic winds which come out to give it a bit of a chill to it. No rain, mind you. And what's coming down? All this is the leaves coming down from it. So we're going to... Solar's going to peak up a bit. In 1818, Hegel accepted a renewed office of the Chair of Philosophy at the University of Berlin, which had remained vacant since Johann Gottlob Friedrich's death in 1814. They're just blood oath, we don't have the right person here. Here Hegel published his Philosophies of the Right, as in, I suppose not the right wing, but of the 1821. Hegel devoted himself primarily to delivering his lectures. His lectures called on aesthetics, the philosophy of religion, philosophy of history, the history of philosophy were published posthumously, even from lecture notes taken by his students. His fame spread, and his lectures attracted students from all over Germany and beyond. So he's just a good... He was... What he wanted to do, he wanted to make philosophy accessible, and he knew it. It's just he added some extras in. Hegel was appointed rector of the university in October 1829, but his term as rector ended in a year later. Hegel was deeply disturbed by the riots for reform in Berlin that year. It seems everyone. 1813, Frederick William III decorated him with the Order of the Red Eagle, third class, for a service to the Prussian state. Okay, he's obviously someone who is an establishment man. In August 1831, a cholera epidemic reached Berlin. Hooray! And Hegel left the city, taking up logic in Kreuzberg. Now, in a weak state of health, Hegel still went out. His new semester began in October. Hegel returned to Berlin with the mistaken impression the epidemic had largely subsided. By November, obviously he'll cark it. By November 14, Hegel was dead. Oh, well, that's how he's dead. Blah! Physicians pronounced the cause of death as cholera, but it is likely he died from a distant He managed to outwit cholera by dying of something else. He is said to have uttered the last words, and he didn't understand me before expiring. What the fuck? Sorry. In accordance with his wishes, Hegel was buried on November the 16th. Alright, not on the particular date. I want to be buried on a date. At the Dorotheenstadt Cemetery next to Fisch and Wilhelm Ferdinand Slogger. So Fischer was the thing. Whoever Slogger was, I don't know. Hegel's son, Ludwig Fischer, died shortly after, while serving the Dutch military in Bavaria, and the news of his death never reached his father. Oh, wow. This is bizarre. There's Germans everywhere. Everyone's fighting anyone. Early the following year, Hegel's sister, Christiane, committed suicide by drowning. Go, Hegel. What a family man. Remaining two sons, Karl, who became a historian, and Emmanuel, who followed the theological path, lived along and safeguarded their father's Nash a loss and produced editions of his works. Wow. So it's pretty hard to understand. He wanted to be a mouthpiece, and he became a mouthpiece for the state. How we're doing philosophical work. Freedom. Hegel and freedom, it just does my head in. Hegel thinking can be understood as a constructive development within a broad tradition that includes Plato and the Mendelkant. So Plato, the form and spirits of the Mendelkant, the Christianization of it. I'm going to have to reread him. To this, one could add Proclus, Meister Eckhart, Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz. So Leibniz was a Christian. I'd think he was a romantic philosopher myself, but I sort of understand him from calculus and I'm going to have to stop. So continuing to read, you can hear the pretty wild winds around here. Okay. What all these thinkers share, which distinguishes them from materialists, like Epicurus. So Epicurus, he's the person who believed of, you know, really enjoying your life as it comes along. And this is Epicure, part of magazines, fine wine and dining. Really is not his cup of tea. Thomas Hobbes and the empiricists like David Hume, is they regard freedom or self-determination both as real and having important ontological implications for the soul, mind, or divinity. Yeah, these are all soul people, and might see what soul, you know, what's the will and all this type of stuff, where it's not so much. This focus on freedom is what generates Plato's notion of, in Phaedo, Republic, and Timaeus, now, these are all actually screenplays that he used to write, of the soul as having a higher or fuller kind of reality than innate object possesses. While I sort of criticises Plato's forms, the theory of the forms, he preserves Plato's cornerstone of an assumption with recent arguments of a prime mover. Cornerstones of the ontological implication of self-determination, ethical reasons, the soul's pinnacle in the hierarchy of nature, in the order of the cosmos, and an assumption with the recent arguments of a prime mover. So this is God, you know, what is the prime mover behind it? Pretty mad. Kant import Plato's high esteem of individual sovereignty to his considerations of moral and noumenal freedom. Noumenal freedom. I don't know what that means. I don't know what noumenal freedom means, as well as to God. All three kinds find common ground in the unique position of humans in the scheme of things, known by the discussed catalogical differences between animals and inanimate objects. Yeah. He basically got three groups here. Quite work out how he got three groups. There's the Leibniz, and other people. In his discussion of spirit in his encyclopedia, Hegel praises Aristotle on the soul. By far the most admirable, perhaps even the sole work of philosophical value on the topic. In his Phenomenology of the Spirit and his Science of Logic, Hegel concerns with Kantian topics such as freedom, morality, and the ontological implications is pervasive. Rather than simply rejecting Kant's dualism of freedom versus nature, whatever that means, I really don't understand what freedom and nature means, but Frant had, I bet he's going to merge them together. So they're all one, and then this dialectic yoga, and the two compete as part of a greater whole, I suppose. Hegel aims to sublime, subsume within true infinity, the concept or notion, Begriff, spirit, ethical life, in such a way the Kantian duality is rendered intelligible rather than remaining a brute given. You can see where Hegel's coming from, but again, I'm going to have to reread some of these things. The reason why this subsumption takes place in a series of concepts is that Hegel's method in his Science of Logic and his Encyclopedia is to begin with the basic concepts like being and nothing and develop these through a long sequence of elaborations, including those already mentioned. In this manner, a solution that reaches the principle in the account of true infinity and the Science of Logic chapter on quality is repeated in new guises at later stages, all the way to spirit and ethical life in the third volume of the Encyclopedia. So this is pretty amazing that these people have a method that nowadays you've got Russell who's put logical arguments into mathematical forms. We'd have a computer program doing it. This person just had this encyclopedic knowledge of his arguments. He became expert on himself, I suppose. In this way, Hegel intends to defend the germ of truth in Kantian dualism against the reductive and limited programs like those of materialism and empiricism. Okay, so they're materialists and empiricists. So empiricists would be Humes. Epicurus would... the spiritualists, materialists, and empiricists. And I think empiricists have actually one day, my friend. Like Plato, with his dualism of the soul versus bodily appetite, Kant pursues the mind's ability to question its felt inclinations or appetites and to come up with a standard of duty, or in Plato's case, good, which transcends bodily restrictiveness. Hegel preserves this essential Platonic and Kantian concern in the form of infinity, going beyond the finite, a process that Hegel, in fact, relates to freedom and the ought. So you can imagine that being another key element of communism myself. Because you've got to, you know, that surely means eventually you're going to die. You imagine that once you have decided to die, what occupies yourself, your thoughts in the last 5 seconds of life. Hegel renders these dualities intelligibly and ultimately in his argument in the quality chapter of Science and Logic. The finite has become infinite in order to achieve reality. The idea of absolute excludes multiplicity of subjective and objective, thus achieve a synthesis to become whole. This is because, as Hegel suggests in his introduction of the concept reality, what determines itself rather than depending on relations to other things for essential characters or more fully real, following the Latin etymology of real, meaning more thing-like, then what does not. Finite things do not determine themselves because, as finite things, their essential characters is determined by their boundaries over and against the finite things. In order to become real, they must go beyond their finitude. Finitude is only as a transcending of itself. What a load of rot, can I say? And quantum physics, ah, God. The result of this argument is that finite and infinite, and by extension peculiar and universal, nature and freedom, do not face one another as two independent realities, but instead the latter, in each case, is self-transcending the former. Rather than stress the distinct singularity of each factor and components and conflicts with others without explanation, the relationship between finite and infinite, and particular universal nature and universal and nature and freedom becomes intelligible as a progressively developing a self-perfecting whole. I don't know. It seems garbage to me, unfortunately. Okay. Progress. The mystical writings of Jacob Boehme had a strong effect on Hegel. Boehme had written, "The fall of man was a necessary stage in the evolution of the universe. This evolution was itself a result of God's desire for complete awareness." Hegel was fascinated by the works of Kant, Rousseau, Wolfgang, Goethe, and by the French Revolution. Modern philosophy, culture, society seemed to Hegel fraught with contradictions and tensions, such as those between the subject and object of knowledge, the mind and nature, self and other, freedom and authority. I think Kant actually came up with the thought of not other. It's a bizarre. In Latin and Romanticism. Okay, Hegel's main philosophical project was to take these Scottish dictions and intentions and interpret them as part of a comprehensive evolving rational unity in the different contexts he called absolute idea and absolute knowledge.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.